Democrats stage another walkout. Is it a mistake? The air war over right to work. The governor's about face on statehouse security changes. And Charlie White hangs on to office for now. That plus Greg Ballard's inaugural and the house cleaning at the Colts Complex on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending January 6,
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. The path to a successful business has unexpected twists and turns. The legal professionals at Ice Miller are dedicated to guiding businesses along the journey. Experience takes businesses to the top. Ice Miller can help them stay there. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
This week, the Democrats, who conducted a five-week walkout last year in a successful effort to stop the right to work bill, began this year's General Assembly by again failing to report for duty. Minority Leader Pat Bauer went behind closed doors Wednesday, ignoring requests for meetings with House Speaker Brian Bosma. Bosma tried unsuccessfully to start business that would include the formal scheduling of a Friday hearing on the right to work bill, but was repeatedly denied a quorum. Then both sides turned to the media, Bauer saying he's not conducting a walkout, while Bosma charged the Democrats with taking instructions from organized labor.
No, I think it's a filibuster till we can get the truth and knowledge about the bill.
I find it entirely inappropriate for a special interest group to be directing conduct as has apparently happened here today.
Can Democrats stop the right to work bill? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney. Republican Mike McDaniel. John Schwannis, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV Statehouse reporter Jim Schella. Mike McDaniel, why did Republicans take up right to work in the first week?
Because this issue is going to drive this session. Everybody knew it would. They took it up in the first week because they want to get it done as quickly as they can. They think that this is important to bring jobs to the state. As has been said many times, approximately a third of the people that come looking at Indiana write us off immediately because we're not a right-to-work state. And in this environment, when you're trying to bring every job you can to the state, you need every tool possible. And by not having it, we're losing out on jobs. When we do have a chance to get a consideration, we're good about two-thirds of the time, and so this would help increase the chances of bringing new jobs to the state.
The Democrats say they're moving too fast.
Well, of course they are. What are they going to say? They've got to do something to placate the financial base of their party, and these are the guys that pay for the unions, pay for their campaigns, and they've got to do something to placate them, and that's what this is all about right now.
Meantime, the Democrats aren't holding together all that well, it doesn't appear. We've now gone through a three-day walkout, and this morning Dale Grubb, who's been in leadership since 1994, resigned his position and appeared on the floor both yesterday and today. It looks like there's trouble in paradise.
When was the legislature ever paradise?
Especially a hearing room.
Yeah, exactly. But you know what's at issue here is really interesting. I mean, Taft-Hartley was passed in what, 1955, 54, somewhere in there. Okay, we're talking about
federal
60
law.
Years.
Federal
the federal law on this, 60 years. But we have to get it done in the Indiana General Assembly before the Super Bowl comes, and then we have to restrict access to the state house because we're afraid the voters might actually want to be heard on this question. Oh, my gosh, what a terrible thing. If they're serious about this being such a good thing, and actually it's not the right to work bill anyway, it's the right to work for less bill is what it is. If they're serious about the benefits of this, and they never mention the names of these companies that supposedly would come here but for the right to work, if they're really serious about this, they would hold statewide hearings. They would even put this on a referendum.
Well,
that's
what the Democratic demand is. And they actually came up with the referendum on a suggestion from somebody else today, I think. But their demand has been that they want statewide hearings. They're going to hold their own statewide hearings now because they want everybody to know how terrible this bill is. The idea being that if people know what it is, they'll encourage Republicans to vote against it. Can they win this battle?
Well, they could win the battle for the hearts and minds of Hoosiers, because the Bowen poll at Ball State University showed that about half of Hoosiers don't really have a strong opinion about right to work. So that's really what's going on right now, is that battle for the hearts and minds. But the first question you pose is, can they win the battle on the bill? And the answer is no, unless they decide they're going to, you know, scuttle the whole session, and that's not going to happen. So this bill will pass, and what you're going to have is you're setting up the campaign for the fall now, because they'll go out and they'll use the issue, and I wouldn't be surprised to see a list of amendments as long as my leg that they'll force the Republicans to vote on, and then they'll have to defend those.
Yeah.
That many, okay,
and
that's a lot of amendments.
They're not a short man.
And so I think we're seeing the formation of the battle in the fall.
And there was a hearing today in a joint House-Senate committee. The House committee couldn't vote because of the walkout. Senate committee passed the bill onto the Senate floor, 6-4. There's no stopping this.
No, there is no stopping it, and clearly this is on rails. It's not unprecedented to have a joint House-Senate hearing like that, but it is unusual. So when you hear Republican leadership say this bill is being handled like any other, you kind of have to say, well, maybe not any other bill, because it is clearly a desire, I think, to get this done before the national spotlight shifts here. You've seen now the NFL Players Association, I think, for the second year take a stand on this. And I don't know.
In opposition, to work.
In opposition, and while that's
to work for less.
And while that's not the be all and end all, I mean, the players' union is not going to, I don't think, shape opinion, but it runs a risk of becoming a real national. It's already a national issue, but this will become even more the battlefield.
The Democrats are doing everything they can to get it on cable TV
to stretch and make it. Sure, there's some logic to the. To the machinations on both sides. I mean, from a political sense, both are doing the right thing.
Speaking of the NFL, Mike, you're wearing your Super Bowl lapel pin. There's some concern here that unions might try to scuttle some of the Super Bowl plans in this city as a protest. Any concern about that?
No, I think they can't be that dumb. I mean, this would hurt them long term, even worse if they did that. And since we're talking about polling information here, the realtors did a poll about a month ago that showed that 68% of the people of Indiana, and most of them strongly oppose the kind of tactics that are going on now, where they left the state last time and they're not there to do their jobs. So if, in fact, they continue this tactic over the course of the session, they run the risk of alienating voters even more. So if you're talking about setting up for the fall campaign, you there's a fine balance there between what you're doing and how you're going about doing it.
Yeah. Well,
practical matter, if they don't show up Monday, they're susceptible to $1,000 a day fines.
Yeah, that's right, and they know that. They know that.
They'll be back
Monday.
There's
a lot at stake. There's a lot at
Will
stake here.
Monday?
I don't know that they'll be back Monday, because there's a lot of stake here for working people. It's not simply for union people. It's for all working people, because it'll drive wages down.
Excuse me, Michael. It is
if
wrong.
You read the data, you'd know you're wrong.
Your data says that.
This is the one
where
it drives down.
There's a lot of data out there. I'll say that.
Proving once again, you can get data to say anything.
It drives down the wages for all working people, whether they're union or not. And that's what they're trying to do, and that's the chamber's goal.
Moving on. There's an air war surrounding the right to work debate. The AFL-CIO has ads in opposition to it, and the governor appears in ads supporting it, ads produced by a political action committee that won't reveal its donors.
This law is an attack on working people and does nothing to create jobs. We need our leaders to stop targeting workers and start working to fix our economy.
I've looked into the arguments against the idea, and they just don't hold up. Right to work has no effect on safety or the workers' right to organize. Several right to work states are more unionized than Indiana.
And Delaney, is that a fair fight?
You mean that these groups out there can spend unlimited amounts of
money? Indiana Opportunity Fund.
Whatever the heck the name of it is, who knows who that is? I mean, I know Jim Bopp's associated with it. Who knows who's giving him money? That's what Citizens United is all about. Anybody can pump unlimited amounts of money in here, not just in expression of free speech, but in order to change the entire debate on an economic issue to their own benefit. They can use corporate money. They can use all kinds of money for that. And if anybody doesn't think that there's, they don't have to disclose under the way the IRS regulations are. We're going to have caps gone, and money is going to drive the entire political process. And that's what the Republicans have always wanted.
Now, the governor was asked if they should disclose the donors, and he said, ask them.
That's the right answer. The problem is the Supreme Court made this decision. And this is free speech.
The activist Supreme Court.
The Supreme Court made
the
decision.
It is,
it's their decision.
Controlled by Republicans.
But when you want to work for you, it's okay. But when it's not, you don't.
You do the
same
thing.
Come on, Ann.
Every time they make a decision, you don't like
it. If it's a Democrat cause, you think it's a great idea.
Tell me this.
So they're doing what the Democrats have been doing for 2 years.
50 years of precedent. Just like that.
The next will be to remove the caps, and I'm for that. Remove the caps. Let's have all the free speech we can have.
How unusual is this for the governor to appear in an ad purchased by outside
interests?
Somebody
you won't reveal.
It's unusual, and I think there's a risk here of a theme that's emerging. If people aren't careful here, you have the sense, potentially, and this could be spun, and I'm sure people will try to spin it this way, that this, what we've seen in the last week, whether it's the ads where you don't know where the money is who's funding it, where you had the early on argument over who can come in the state house and how many people of from this side of the...
Yeah, we'll get to that in a minute.
I know, but I mean, we will. But it's this notion of that somehow the legislative process is meant for somebody other than the people who raise families here and pay taxes here. I mean, you get a sense that it's leave it to others to worry about these things. And I sense there's a theme there that could be troubling long term, as people already think that they're not part of the process and that it's the...
Well, they're not.
You
know?
Think
they're
the
not
public's
part of the process.
Worried about this? I don't think so.
I don't think there is.
There is an unusual atmosphere in the State House this year.
There is a very unusual atmosphere in the State House this year. And it is interesting because you have, you know, these campaign tactics going on at a time when normally you wouldn't. You'd have the legislative kind of downtime. But all of this free speech is pretty darned expensive, and there's an awful lot of money that's being raised to express this free speech. And we'll see where it goes, because I think there's some sentiment. People are starting to take notice, I think, Mike, of this idea that you know, corporations are people. And I think people wonder about that, and we'll see how it may mutate over time, because I don't think this is a settled issue by any means.
And back when there were spending caps, I remember people who would say, you know, we got to get rid of the caps because disclosure is the disinfectant. As long as there's disclosure,
then everything
is going to be fine. And now some of these same people have somehow forgotten the old argument that they were making that as long as it's disclosed, it's in a timely manner, it's okay. And now saying, well, I guess you don't even need to do that. And that is a problem.
It's not independent expenditures anyway. They mirror exactly what the campaign was. They listen to the words they're using. And the idea that they're independent is ridiculous.
All right. Even before the session started, the governor struck down a controversial new security policy at the State House. He made the announcement as union protesters filed into the building on the first day of the 2012 General Assembly. The new security policy was designed to limit the number of people in the State House to 3,000 at one time, and more than 1,500 worked there. Opponents of the plan said it was designed to limit dissent, and the governor said he has no desire to do that.
I want to show respect for those who argued against the new policy, including our political opposition. They made good points. And when it comes to a call, I think they are right that we should err on the side of openness.
John Katzenberger, is that the right call?
It is the right call, absolutely. And it was one that unfortunately had to be made, because if they wanted to make these public safety arguments about the State House and capacity and you know, numbers of people and how people would move in and out, they should have done it in July or June or some other time. But they did it on the last business day of the year when no one is around, no one can get it, and clearly it was an attempt.
And then they had the state police and others try to explain it on the day before the first day of the General
Assembly.
That's exactly
right, and I felt bad for Sergeant, or I guess he's Captain Burstyn now, because...
He deserves a promotion after trying to explain that, right?
Exactly right. But, you know, that's part of the weird atmosphere that went on. I mean, the police presence on the first day was really kind of surreal.
It's still pretty strong.
It is, and it's you know, it's if there are threats, then I think the public ought to know. I think, you know, the governor made the right call, and it really shouldn't have gotten to that point to begin with.
Was this an effort to tamp down dissent?
Is that a serious question?
Look,
sure it is.
It really doesn't matter if it is or isn't. for a couple of reasons. One, it was just
dumb
policy and dumb politics. It sends the wrong message, as I just alluded to a moment ago. And clearly, whoever, you know, she wrote the book Politics for Dummies. Somebody who wrote this policy needs to read it, because it just had no, the optics were all wrong. The timing, as John suggests, was all wrong. And there isn't much now in that lawmakers from both sides of the aisle agree on, but as you'll see on this week's installment of Indiana Lawmakers, available on many of these same public television stations, we had the four caucus leaders.
That's only two.
And even Pat Bauer and Brian Bosma. It was their first meeting, by the way, of the session, face-to-face, in those two chairs. And and they actually agreed that this was a failed policy.
Okay, back to this program. The governor did this, he said, for practical reasons, but there were some political reasons too, weren't there? Didn't he think that this might prevent a Democratic walkout?
No, I don't think that was part of the equation. I think that was a wrong decision to start with, to limit how many people were going to be in the building. Now, I will say this. I think they were trying to do it for public safety reasons, and I can tell you, having been there organization day, it was dangerous around the Senate chambers when they had so many people crammed into that small space. But to try to decide on 3,000 people, this, clearly the State House can hold more than 3,000 people. So that number was bogus and, to start with. Right. So the governor made the right call by reversing this. I think they were trying to err on the side of public safety. What they have done in the meantime is helping it, because they've created two areas in front of the House and the Senate where people can watch, but then they've also created an aisle so people can get through. So it is much safer now than it was.
They've also improved press parking.
Have they?
That's
good. Good. But it was fundamentally wrong.
Do you think that they'll go back and try to, in the off season, will they try to increase?
No, first of all, you can say what you want about public safety. This was political from the beginning. Nobody makes a decision like this on the eve of what's going to be an acrimonious session without running that up the food chain to the governor's office and getting sign-off from the governor's office on this. And if they did it without that, their heads ought to roll, because this was a very big political mistake. And he had to undo
it
because the outcry was so great. Great. But when they even tried to restrict the signs, the size of the signs, what that has to do with security, it was political from the beginning. He just got caught.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific poll question in connection with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question is, did the governor make the right call on State House security? Your choices are A, yes, B, no, or C, there should be a happy medium. Last week's question was, what issue will dominate the 2012 General Assembly? 81% said right to work, 4% said the smoking ban, 9% said education spending, and 6% said something else. To take part in the poll, just go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Secretary of State Charlie White will stay in office while a judge's order to remove him is under appeal. That was the ruling this week by Judge Louis Rosenberg. Last month, Rosenberg ruled that White was ineligible to be on the ballot and should be replaced by Democrat Vop Oesele. The judge denied a Democratic Party request this week that called for Oesele to replace White if he's convicted in a criminal trial scheduled for this month, or if he resigns. John Schwanes, is the end of the line in sight for Charlie White?
I don't know. What do we have to talk about? This has been a staple now for, a year? Clearly there's some end in sight here one way or the other, because this will come to a trial. There's so many different competing.
There's a civil effort to take him out.
Which we're talking about, and then
there's also a criminal trial.
And then
there's a third effort from Republicans who want to make sure that a Republican holds that seat, who want him to resign.
Right. I mean, it's going to unfold. These things, because they're tied up in not one, not two, but as you point out, Jim, three different rails legally, it's going to take time. And I guess if you look at what Judge Rosenberg did, this is probably the logical thing, because you know full well it's going to be appealed, as it was. The worst thing is probably to say, you're out, bring Vop Oesele in, and then appeals court says another thing. So, nope, then you're gone.
That's why the judge granted the stay this week. This doesn't look good for Charlie White, though.
No, but it hasn't looked good for Charlie White for a year, so I don't know how that's really changed. I don't know how it'll end up, ultimately, what the decision is, but I think one of the interesting things here from a political perspective is If Judge Rosenberg had not issued the stay, then Osley would have been installed as the Secretary of State. But if he is found guilty at the trial, or if he resigns, then the governor gets to select his successor.
I'm not sure that's correct.
Is that not right?
Well, what the Democrats will do is run to court and say that...
That'll be the fourth legal challenge.
Judge Rosenberg should lift the stay.
He was ruled ineligible to be on the ballot. All he did was stay the execution of that ruling of ineligibility. This is going to wind up in the Supreme Court.
But if not in the case of the trial.
It's going to wind up in the Supreme Court with all of these things.
In the criminal trial, if he's... found guilty on some of these other charges, wouldn't it be in the governor's purview?
The Democrats still run to court and say
that the judge has already ruled him ineligible to be on the ballot, and so therefore the only eligible person on the ballot should be the Secretary of State.
But
if he resigns, the execution. I don't care.
If he resigns, however,
beforehand,
the governor does have
the execution.
The Republican Party will have control over who succeeds.
If he resigns without being convicted, that's probably true.
That's right.
But we'll see.
The Democrats will still go to court, right?
So will the Republicans.
This isn't good for...
it's not good for anybody, clearly. But it is going to end up in the Supreme Court before it's over. And we're going to have to wait and see what happens. I mean, this is going to go on for another probably 5 months or so.
You didn't anticipate the judge issuing...
No, I thought the first decision... And I've even had Democrats tell me how surprised they were that he overturned the bipartisan 5-0 decision of the recount commission.
I
had a lot of Democrats tell me that.
Yeah.
Although I think he made the right decision, the second decision on, because you don't want to take somebody out and then be reversed.
Right.
But all this embarrassment could have been spared if the Republicans had not put him on the ballot in the first place.
They won by a big margin. The voters have spoken in.
Voters didn't
know
who he was.
Moving on, Greg Ballard took the oath of office this week to begin his second term as mayor of Indianapolis. In his inaugural speech, Ballard said it was humbling to be rehired. He said his vision for Indianapolis is to become something more.
Capital of the new Midwest. Indianapolis should seize this opportunity to become that capital.
And Delaney, what's that mean?
Well, I think what he's saying, and I wish him well in this, is that we could make Indianapolis into a world-class city. And he's doing the right things. I mean, he's going forward to the legislature and talking about mass transit, for example, which has to happen in Indianapolis for us to get to that next level. Now, I don't know whether he's going to get the kind of bipartisan cooperation he wants, since they keep putting poison pills in the transit bill, and you keep having the Republicans worry about Grover Norquist and a tax increase, even if we want to pay it. But he's right on that. We are positioned geographically and a lot of other reasons to take it to that next level if he can get that transportation system under control.
What's the new Midwest? And if we become the capital, who do we displace?
I think he's excited about the fact that he won by the numbers that he won and has the support that he has from the public right now. And I think he wants to do what he can to move this city forward. And I think it's good to have the goal to make us the shining example in the Midwest, which is exactly what he's talking about.
Okay.
I agree with that.
Will this be Greg Ballard's last term?
So the question is he a lame duck?
He's been on the job, 2 days.
The honeymoon doesn't last long when you're Pinchella.
There is the HUD Nut Forever bill. You're not limited to terms in the office of mayor of Indianapolis.
I don't know. At some point, I suppose,
when you
pride yourself on being a non-politician, by the third or fourth or fifth term, you might become a politician. I don't know.
I think there is a good point being made here, though, that I just want to amplify, and that is a city that stops aspiring to be a better place to live dies.
Exactly.
And I think that's what the mayor was expressing, and I think that's very necessary for the rest of the city to follow the lead.
And with the Super Bowl and all the attention that will be here, it's very natural for people to want to aspire because this is a world-class city, and I think that'll be showcased in the coming weeks.
Finally, Indianapolis Colts owner Jim Irsay cleaned house this week, firing Vice Chairman Bill Polian and General Manager Chris Polian. Irsay said it was a difficult decision. He's known Bill Polian for over 30 years, and Polian helped give Irsay his only Super Bowl win as an owner.
This is difficult. I mean, this is the tough part of this business. But I've always said there is a great loyalty in this business because when I walk into the locker room with my team on opening Sunday, I'm expected to make sure the circle that I've built is as strong as it can be for us to win.
Mike McDaniel, right move?
I'll tell you what, this had to be a difficult decision for him because I think one of the best moves he ever made was putting Bill Bullen in charge of football operations. It brought us the most winning NFL team for the last decade of any team in the NFL. And, you know, it's hard to say that that wasn't a great thing. And but when you have the collapse that they had this year, I'm sure this is still owned by the Irsay family. Yeah. So he had to make a decision, and he did. I hope it's the right one.
Did he need to do this in order to keep the fan base on his side?
I don't think this is the issue that's going to keep the fan base on his side. I think the decision on the quarterback is what's going to decide.
Well, that's what this was about. This is all about not having a backup quarterback.
Well, maybe, but I'm talking about going forward, and that's what's going to determine where the fan base
is. Who's it going to be? Luck, Manning,
both. How about Blockbuster trade?
That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanis of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/podcast, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity. Just go to Hoosier TV and look for Indiana Week in Review under News. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Things can go wrong in a thousand different ways. Businesses need a law firm that knows the thousand and first. The team of legal professionals at Ice Miller is committed to helping put the pieces back together. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.